I'm Rusty Lottie, and probably the only person in this room who's come to more of these meetings is Carla Moore. And I feel like I've just gone over the same thing over and over, so I took so much of it out this time, and then there was all these, now this time with all these new people, I could have shown what we do in the lab. So we do have some new things going on this year, though, that I haven't had before because of NSF gave us funding for a couple of new projects. We've been doing this 60 years. I think Woods Hole has been doing it longer, but 60 years for us since 1949. This is our core location map. This is done with GeoMap app. As you can see, we have global coverage, many in the far northern, southern oceans. This is unique about our repository that we have estuaries, oceans, rivers, lakes. We have everything. The collection, the total is almost 9,000 with 13,000 sites. The dry storage, as you can see, is the bulk of it, 2,000 wet stored, about 3,000 dredges and grass. This is our, the core repository, Wilmot Doherty. This is our, the dry storage. There are several rows of this. I took out the floor plan to show you how many of these. There's a couple hundred thousand of these trays. They're stored dry, and as you'll see later, half of all of our samples that go out are from these old dry cores. And those are new publications coming out of these old dry cores. So we take as much care of them as we do the wet cores. And this is our wet storage. We don't have uniform sizes like ODP either. We have three different sizes of the D tubes. But even that's not good enough. We get these Bren peel cores from France. And when they arrive, they're just such delicate condition that we decided the best thing to do is just let them stay in those boxes instead of abusing them anymore. But we have these funny tubes. We just have a storage nightmare. And this is refrigerated.
Is the dry storage refrigerated?
No, that's just climate control. Yeah. Our residuals also are very important. So many of those dry cores, there's nothing left but residuals. And this is composed of people who left Lamont, and we inherited boxes, sometimes piano boxes, size of little bags, and they've all gone in here. And this might even be closer to 300,000 now. And sometimes people just take too many samples, and they agree to send us back what they don't use, even residuals. We take residuals back because as from those old dry cores, sometimes that's all that's left that we distribute. This is our facilities. This is just the one lab. We also have a physical properties lab, but this is our main sampling lab. We also have an x-ray room. We have a car logger room, one that goes to see. So we do. We have an x-radiograph. We have the two loggers. The one that's in the physical property stays in the lab all the time. The one goes to sea. We have carbonate. We do grain size analysis. We have a full lab. The system describing our course started at the beginning, 2 years before. We started in 1947, and we essentially stayed to this. Lamont never went to barrel sheets for some reason. So I tried on a cruise to do barrel sheets, but it took like a year using the programs to do the barrel sheets, and we don't have that much time to spend on doing these things, so we just flip back to our old system, which is now our new system. We do it on the computer, and we have digital photographs. The lawsuit is that we have always done it the same way. These digitized descriptions are available on the web. You can do a search, a Boolean search. You can ask for any word. You can even ask for wood. And if it's in one of these cores, it's going to turn up. So that is one of the advantages of this, the verbal description, is that whatever the describer saw in the core, he could put in this description instead of having to stick to a format that was column-based.
See? There's one statement there that is very important. I'm not sure how how many people recognize that. Continuity is the LDEO law of students.
Yes, it is.
And that is one of the most important, no matter how sophisticated and fantastic a lot of data-based programs and stuff are, having people that are part of it for a long time, you know, and anyway, I could expound on that, but that's really
good. Yes, thank you. I agree. And a lot of other people have said this also. We have formalized the SHIP log, and of course we do different things, and we do plan to put all of these things on our database as it improves. I think a lot of this goes to the NGDC. I think it has to. This is our core search that's online. As I said, all of the descriptions were digitized, so you can, I didn't put on the sheet here. So this is kind of the meta page of the metadata, where you can search by the coordinates or the SHIP. Okay, our metadata management. We still keep it in the analog format because people still come and will stay for a week and they want to sit at a table and go through the books and look at, we even print out the digitized pictures because it's that continuity thing. They just like to do it. So I don't know how to change over. and it's 60 years of the data. This is another thing that helped us with our database. From the earliest stages of computers, one of the curators at Lamont decided to jump in and start computerizing all of the data. And that, so when we finally went on the web, it wasn't a big deal. It had been put in with key punch cards, and it was an easy thing to shift all of this stuff over to the web, to database management. All the metadata is in NGDC. We are entering into SAFER. The descriptions are on the LEO web, as I said before. Also, course sampling history, I'll show you that. All the course photos are now digital, thanks to Carla. And results of the work on materials, which I will also show you, is beginning to go on the web. Okay, this is a record of a core taken in 1948. This is the metadata and the sample history. This is what I was telling you before. So I'm just telling you about some of the newer things that we're doing. Left out all the older stuff. Okay, so this is a sample history of a core that was taken in 1948. And back up a little bit about the sample history. We finally got this program to do it. So what we're doing is we're trying to enter sample history of new things, new samples that are going out. But we're also working from the rear end, which is why we have sample history that dates from even 1960. We're starting at the earliest record keeping of our sample history. And hopefully one day, maybe 10 years from now, we'll meet in the middle. We'll have it all on digital. So this would be sample history. I actually searched for any of the AT cores. So this produced all the cores that were Atlantis that have the samples taken. And if you clicked on a core, I don't know if I have it there here. Yeah, no, this isn't that one. If you clicked on a core, then you would get its sample history. Who took it, the intervals that were taken. This one, this is a person, his name, and this one I searched for the RC81. So it comes up with Daniel Habib took samples in 1965. So if you click on here, I should be doing this. If you click on this, you will find the sample history record. But this is it. So and if you go up to here, then you're going to go back to the metadata of the core. So this one you've already clicked on here, and he took just one sample, two CTs at 1,280 centimeters. If you click on any single one of those, you're going to get the sample history. Since all this stuff has been on the computer for so long, I get to make sheets like this, and these are the number of cores that were taken in these years, number of cores over here, and this is the number of samples that went out over this particular year. So you can see, this is back when Ewing was demanding that one core a day be taken. That's our history of one core a day. So sometimes we had 1,000 cores come in a year. And then it went down And then this is Climax. This was a long, a 10-year program. And Climax ended, and then SpecMap started. But the cores were going down. But this is all the sampling that went with these programs to study the Holocene climate. And here you'll notice, this is when we had absolutely no ship. The VEMA went out somewhere along here. We lost the VEMA. And here, we lost the Conrad also, so we had no cores at all. But the sampling stayed pretty high. And here, this is coming back in, this is 1907-08 fiscal year, and the sampling, it's a tremendous amount of samples taken out of these cores. So we're a very active repository, even when our cores go very low. Some core facts, 85% of the collection was taken by 1979. So it is just a bunch of dusty old cores. They are old, but they're sampled. 70% of the cores were taken when we had both of those ships, as you saw the high amount that was taken when both of them were going out to sea. And most of the cores were destined to be archived and stored unsampled. And that was Ewing's dictum of a core a day. There was no principal investigator that had a plan for the cores. He just said that these were actually ship transects going from one place to another. And Ewing said, stop that ship at one particular point during the day and take a core. And so this represents how many days it took them to make this transect. And then they came back, they were opened, described, photographed, and stuck on the shelves. And he just said, someday someone will use them. And here we are. This happens even every single year. Some researcher will find a suite of cores sitting on those shelves that have never been touched. They're pristine. The only thing, every 10 centimeters or so, you'll see a tiny little scoop mark where a sample was taken for a megascopic description, and that's it. So for NSF to support this is a win-win, because it's a lot cheaper than going out on a cruise. Okay. And so half of all of our samples are taken from these dry cores. This is a fairly high resolution sampling from, this North Atlantic core. This one was not sampled until the 1990s, and this is now one of our absolutely famous climate cores now. I mean, everybody wants to sample this core. So it's almost gone from the tray now. But that's that whole area in the rafts of these North Atlantic cores had just sat there. Nobody looked at them until about 1995. And now it's just, we just constantly are sampling those suites of cores. So plans for the future. Well, we'll do what we're told to do for curation. This is what we all must do, is just take care of them and spread the samples. Okay, this is a new project. When I visited Dennis Cassidy many, many, many years ago, one of his favorite things to do, almost a hobby, but it was so helpful. Everybody talked about the wonderful core library he had, and that he had all of the cores keyed to the publications. If you said you wanted to put publications from a core, he was right there with it. So I started doing that. I started keying the publications to the cores. And one day, in cleaning out some dusty corner, somebody many years ago had also started the same thing, and they were on index cards. Finally, we got a program going to put, I was putting it in Excel, and Bill Ryan figured out how to get it on his GeoMap app. So this represents, as it says here, about 10,000 citations distributed. If you click on any one of these, you come up with a publication. So this one also, we've got to fill the gap, because I think I might have started this in 85 or so when I visited you. And the records that I found in the old files are in 1963. So they went back to about 1953, about 10 years of data. So Bill Ryan had a couple interns last year, he got so excited about it because he just loves to do things like this map. And he was just so impressed that the coverage was so huge that he had a couple interns working on this over the summer, this past summer. So this one is, will move forward also. I think this is fabulous. So we will have more involvement with SAFER. Now this is one of our, NSF gave us new funding for this. Since so much of our work, whether it's geochemical or sedimentology, is climate related, NSF gave us money to do a reconnaissance of carbonate. This is just a test to see how well this works. We'll measure the carbonate every 10 centimeters in a select suite of cores and just get it out to the public because carbonate is just such a key to what's in the core. If this is working, if the scientists really find it as a tool that it reduces the amount of samples that they have to waste time and money sampling to find out if it's a suitable core, if it works, NSF will come back and fund us to do all of the cores. And then this is another one. Those digitized descriptions. We have funding. Chris Jenkins from NGDC is coming this summer, and he's going to parse those verbal descriptions into something that will end up columnar, so that we can make barrel sheets on the fly, and we'll also be able to put the photographs in. He's, I guess, another one of these computer magicians. We'll be able to do this, and then we can also get our longer data and whatever else that we have to fit in. And the plan is to be able to do this on the fly, so the data will be in on the computer, on the net, and you just choose what you want and make a sheet. So, and then continuing processing of samples for researchers, that's our job also. And as for these ice cores, this is not an ice core, but this is from 1963. I also find collections of photos when I'm digging around. Lamont is old, but I'm digging around, and I found a little set of cores. This guy is going through the ice, and they're T3 cores. Some of those, when you saw my map, some of those cores from those really high latitudes, they were on ice floes. And I spoke to a couple people who remembered other talk about it. That one time they all had to, planes had to go in and get them off fast. Oh, you know, you must know all about these stories just from talking to the old guys. But this is 1963, and this is my favorite photo. This one hangs in my office. Is it still there? This is out on the ice floe, a ice floe. I mean, this ice floe gone. You notice that it has, they're gone. So this was already old. Well, how old could it be? The last time they were out there was, I think, 1972, taking these cores. So from 1962 to 72, it was a 10-year program. So 72 might have been the last time they were there, and it's still there, I guess.
Have you had some of the secret?
Oh, yeah. And Drift Station Charlie, Drift Station Alpha. That's those high points that you saw up there. As a matter of fact, I think some of those, for some reason, GeoMap app doesn't always put all the data points on, and they acknowledge it. And I'm positive that some of the T3s came from an area up there, yeah. Maybe Woody knows, that didn't show, that the course didn't show. I think the others on the two sides were maybe the drift stations, and the T3s didn't show up. Anyway, okay. Any questions or whatever?